The following sermon was preached at Selma Community Church, a church in Jefferson City that exists to build communities of transformed disciples who live for the glory of God by connecting people to Christ and community. For more information, you can find it at www.somajc.org.
Hello, friends. Let me just start by praying. That's okay. Let me just pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, we thank you for this community, God. We thank you for being a God who works everywhere, who is present everywhere. God, I pray that you will be speaking through me as I bring the word, God, that any word that is from you will be written permanently onto our hearts, and any word that I say that is not from you will be forgotten as soon as it is heard. So, we thank you again for this time. It's in your name we pray. Amen. So, I'm just really excited for the opportunity to preach the word and explore Jesus with you guys. I'm excited for the chance to dive in and see what it is that God has for us. Like Jake said, my name is Adam Leong. I am a campus missionary with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. So, Trey, in case stuff with crew doesn't work out, come talk to me. We can make something work. InterVarsity is a national campus ministry organization. We serve about 40,000 students over 700 campuses across the United States. I am originally from Southern California, grew up in the Orange County area. Woo! Oh, that's pretty close. Okay, yeah, that's sort of the same, except, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Then I went to school in St. Louis, and I've been working out here in mid-Missouri, mostly in Columbia, but been doing some stuff down here for a little bit since I graduated in 2007. So, Pastor John and I met about a year and a half ago, I think, and we've just been kind of hanging out. And if you guys are on campus, you guys have probably seen me out there with the big PVC pipe displays and trying to tell people about Jesus and whatnot. And so if you're not on campus, come on by. During the school year, we have a lot of fun. It's good stuff. So one of the things I've learned in my 9 years with InterVarsity and doing different guest preachings and conference speaking and those sorts of things is that when you're speaking to an audience and you don't know everybody, it's important to build trust early. It's important to build a sense of rapport. That way they're like, oh, I like him. I'm going to listen more to what he has to say. And the best way that I know how to do that, or my favorite way rather to do that, is to show photos of my family. So let's see. That's my family. And so that was at Mother's Day, and you can see I got the matching t-shirts, our first Mother's Day. That's my wife Megan and my son Ezra. You may have heard him a little bit earlier today. Being a dad, I can tell you right now, being a dad is like the greatest thing ever. So he is 10 and a half months old, and this is like super mobile and like getting a sense of independence. So he's like, I don't need you. I can eat by myself. No. You really can't, dude. I want to point at everything so you'll give it to me, but I want to put my finger in that socket. It's like, no, you probably shouldn't do those things. But it's just tons of fun. He's learning to walk. He's learning to talk. He's learning to eat. He has a few different syllables that he likes. So he can do like, ma, 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 ma. You can go, da, 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 da. You go, pa, 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 right? But for whatever reason, so when he wants his mom, he'll go, ma, 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 ma. And when he sees his grandfather, he'll go, pa, 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 pa. And when he wants me, he says, Ada, like Adam. Like, he won't call me Dada. He'll call me Adam. So we're going to have to work on that whole respect thing a little bit. I'm not entirely sure what to make of that as independent spirit anyway. But he's 10 and a half months old. My wife Megan and I have been married for almost 4 years. And there's a photo from our wedding. And you can see I am super excited. That's actually my shoulder dislocating, it looks like. That was the way that it all worked. But that's a photo from our wedding. And I'm going to tell you guys a little bit something about weddings. Okay, so who's been to a wedding before? Either your own or someone else's, right? Most of us have been to a wedding in some place before. Weddings are a ton of fun, but planning them is just an absolute beast. Okay? There's a reason why I think we're called to only plan one of these things. Is because it is just, it's like you got to pick a date, and you got to pick a venue, and you got to pick the flowers and the colors and all these other things, and right? And then there are like these different expectations that your friends and family have on like what a wedding ought to be. And so you got to like kind of balance all that stuff and the invitations. And that's before you even pay for the whole thing, right? So the best piece of wedding advice that I ever got, I'm just going to share this with you guys. This has nothing, well, it has something to do with the sermon, I guess, but just a little piece of free wedding advice for you is this. Someone once told me, they said, when you're planning your wedding, decide what the one or two most important things are. Spend your money, make sure those things are done well, and don't worry about the rest. And so for us, we said, that sounds great. So what are the two most important things for us? One, we want to make sure that the food is delicious, and we want to make sure the photos are good. Because if the food is delicious, everyone's going to be talking about that party. Right? Like, oh my goodness, that food. Like, yes, yes, remember. Right? If the photos are good, then we get to remember it like this. And so that was where we spent our money. We said, we're going to make sure the food is good, and it was absolutely delicious. We're going to make sure the photos are great, and the rest of it, we're just going to party. And it'll be fine. So that's my piece of free wedding advice to all of you. Do with it what you will. Our passage this morning is actually going to take us to a different wedding, one that's involving Jesus. So I'm going to read the passage and then share a few things about Jesus that I think are important for us to notice. Okay? So this is John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So first, I want to give you guys a little bit of context about where we find ourselves, okay? The story takes place at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. At this point, all he's done is he's called his first disciples, and he hasn't even called all of them yet, okay? So he's called a few of his disciples, and then they go to this wedding. Now, Cana is a town near Nazareth, which is where Jesus was born, and it's about, 8.5, 9 miles away. So at that time, everybody was walking everywhere, so you're looking at like a 3-hour walk. So Jesus walked 3 hours to go to this wedding. Not terrible, but also, you know, not close, but kind of doable, right? And I want to also talk a little bit about weddings. So weddings in those days were a lot different, actually, than the weddings that we see today here in the United States, right? Today, what we have is we have the wedding ceremony, and then there's the reception. And the whole thing takes an afternoon, maybe a day, you know, an evening kind of a situation. In Jesus' time, there was no actual wedding ceremony. The whole thing was this wedding banquet or this wedding reception. It would be held usually at someone's house, like a family member or something like that. And it was pretty much a big party that would last for as long as a week. Okay, so that's kind of where we find ourselves. The party was, like I said, was usually hosted by a family member, and there would be this master of the banquet who would serve as the host or the MC. There's just so much richness in this passage and so many things that we could talk about. But what I want to focus on are a few key pieces of Jesus' character that I think are important. First, we have to recognize that Jesus is someone who responds to invitation. So when Megan and I started planning our wedding, we actually had a kind of a fun cross-cultural moment about the invitation list. Okay? So we're in Meg's culture, weddings are a close-knit, kind of intimate thing. So you invite your family and your extended family, and then a few close personal friends, right? And so it's smaller. It's not necessarily like, you know, 20, 25 people kind of a thing. She's telling me that's not actually the case. But I mean, we talked about smaller weddings, right? Yeah, something like that, right? So it wasn't like, you know, like 50 people, but it was somewhere around there, right? And so you invite your friends and you invite your family, but it's not like an invite everybody kind of situation. So when I grew up, growing up in my Chinese wedding culture, my grandfather, just to tell you guys a story, my grandfather threw my parents a second wedding because he didn't think they had invited enough people to the first one. He said, no, you don't get to get married without me inviting all my friends. So we're going to do this again. And we're going to do it right this time. Okay? So totally different kinds of things. In Chinese culture, weddings are all about showing off and receiving honor. And so you invite as many people as possible. And then you show them honor by inviting them. And then they show you honor back by either showing up or at the very least, like sending a card. And there's this fun game that we play. So we actually ended up having somewhere around like 300 people or so at our wedding. And I remember talking to Meg's family and saying, oh, we're going to have like 300 or so people at our wedding. And they go, man, you guys are having kind of a big wedding, aren't you? Yeah, okay, sure, why not, right? And then I go to my side of the family and I say, we're going to have like 300 or so people at the wedding. And they go, why is your wedding so small? Are you not popular? I'm like, yes, I'm not popular, Mom. That's exactly what the situation is. So, And then my dad was like, no. So he's in California, right? He's like, no, you don't get to get married without me inviting all my friends. So when we visited out in California, they're like, we're going to throw you another wedding. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess the apple doesn't far fall from the tree. Jewish wedding banquets were probably a little more similar to those big sort of weddings, right? What we see is, I love this photo of the wedding. Just like this is an artist's depiction of the wedding at Cana. And you just kind of see the chaos that's happening. And like all sorts of people are invited and everybody's having a really, really good time, right? There are stories that Jesus tells about weddings, and he talks about these large invitation lists and inviting everybody and going out into the fields and the roads and inviting people and those sorts of things. So weddings were probably a pretty big deal. At the same time, we also know that not everybody was invited. Usually at the time, foreigners and commoners were like, you know, they weren't invited to these weddings. So they were big, but they weren't like, you know, the royal wedding kind of a situation. What's important about this, invitation piece, is that we don't actually know why Jesus and his disciples were invited to this wedding. What we do know, though, is that he was invited. And so for whatever the reason, why ever Jesus was invited, the key is that he was invited. And that invitation is what led to his presence. And his presence is what led to the miracle. You see that? So if we think about it, what would have happened if Jesus hadn't been invited to this wedding and they run out of wine? Now, in Jewish culture, you also have to remember it is an honor-shame-based culture, and hospitality is a huge thing. So for you to run out of food or drink at your wedding is a huge dishonor, right? It's just shame upon you and shame upon your family and all these things, right? It wouldn't have gone well. Now, I doubt that the groom at this point, as he's making up his invite list or whatever, says, you know what, let's go ahead and invite that dude from Nazareth and his buddies, because in case we run out of wine, it'll probably be good for us to have a wine insurance policy. I'm sure he'd be able to think of something. I doubt that that's why he was invited. We don't know why he was invited. I'm going to go ahead and say it wasn't because he knew it was going to happen. With as big as these parties get, it's entirely possible that Jesus was just another face in the crowd. Remember, at this point, he hadn't done anything. He wasn't the Messiah proclaimed. He hadn't done any miracles yet. We see in the passage, this is the first miracle that he does. He's only called a few of his followers. And so I don't know that the groom would have been expecting anything. Even if you look in this photo here, right, it's almost kind of this where's Waldo sort of thing. Like, where is Jesus in the midst of this party, right? He's right there, in case you're wondering. But like for the groom, it could have just been another face in the crowd. But that's what makes this miracle all the more interesting. Because all it takes is actually just an invitation for Jesus to enter into a space. And it's his presence that leads to this miracle. So what does this mean for us? I think it highlights how Jesus responds to invitation, even when we don't expect much or even know what's going to happen. So for some of us in this room, maybe we have no idea who this Jesus guy is. We've heard about him a little bit, or maybe our friends have talked about him, or those really interested. If that's you, what would it look like for you to invite him to meet you where you are right now, just to see what would happen. You know who Jesus is. You would call him a buddy. You'd call him a friend. You would gladly invite him to your party, and you'd gladly invite him to where you are. But maybe there are parts of your life that you don't exactly expect him to do anything with. You say things like, sure, he's my savior, but he's not a tutor, so I should probably study harder. Or you say, yeah, you know, he's my Lord, but he's not a money tree, and I have a family to feed, so I'd better work harder. Or you say, yeah, he's King of Kings, but he never even had a girlfriend, so I should probably get working on these relationships on my own, work harder, those things. What would it look like, again, just to see what would happen, for us to invite Jesus into every part of his life, of our lives, knowing that Jesus is someone who responds to invitations, and that if we're willing to take that that risk and invite him to where we are right now, that we could be surprised by the miracles that his presence brings. We see that Jesus is someone who responds to invitation. We also see that Jesus is someone who responds to faith. And in particular, I want to touch on the faith of Mary and the faith of the servants to show how Jesus responds to that faith. Now, I want to get a few misconceptions related to the translation of this passage out of the way first, okay? So I'm going to geek out for a second. I'm going to be a Bible nerd. I apologize in advance, okay? Just if you're not into Bible nerdology, just go ahead and check out for about a minute or so. I'll be back. Okay, great. So when you read this response that Jesus gives in English, it kind of makes him sound a little bit like a jerk, doesn't it? Like, who calls their mother woman? No one that doesn't want to get smacked. That's who calls it, right? Okay? Now, it seems really disrespectful, and here's where the nerd part comes in now. However, when we look at the original Greek and the translation, okay, the word that's translated to woman is actually meant to be a term of endearment or a term of affection, okay? Some different translations have it translated as dear woman, or I like to say, my good lady, those sorts of things, right? Okay. So that's the nerd moment there, right? So if anybody ever says, you ever go through this passage again, someone's like, why is Jesus so disrespectful? You can say, well, actually, in the original Greek. And then, you know, you'll just go ahead and have that moment there. Okay, great. So we know God, Jesus is not being disrespectful. At the same time, he's not calling her mom or mommy either. It's not this full sense of affection. He also doesn't immediately do what Mary asks either. His response is considerably more big picture. Essentially, what he's saying is like, look, my dear lady, I am not a bartender. I have bigger plans than some parlor tricks. Then we see what happens. And at this point, Mary actually has a choice to make. How is she going to respond to what Jesus says? I think she could do a couple different things, right? She could withdraw. She could completely pull herself back and say, well, I tried. I asked. He said no. I guess Jesus just doesn't care that much. There won't be any wine. Shame upon the wedding. You know, whatever. I gave it my best shot. Or she could fight, right? Jesus, I am your mother. You're going to do what I say. Jesus, I've given so much for you. You're going to do what I say. Jesus, why don't you just listen to reason? I know you can do it. Why don't you just do it? She could fight, right? But her response is neither one of those things. She tells the servants, do whatever tells you to do. Now, do we understand the profound nature of what she says? She doesn't know what Jesus is going to do. He might not tell the servants to do anything. Can you just imagine that? She tells the servants, do whatever he tells you to do. And then he says nothing. So servants are just like, anything? No, he could. That he might not say anything in the midst of that. But that's the faith that Mary shows. Essentially, when she says that statement, do whatever he tells you to do, what she is saying is, I trust that Jesus is going to do whatever he's going to do. And that's going to be okay with me. If he does something, that's great. If he doesn't do something, I'm still okay with that. The faith that she shows in her response to Jesus not being super, like being more big picture, not saying yes right away, shows an amazing sense of faith. And then from there, we get to the servants. Okay? I think of the faith that's involved in what the servants have to do. Okay? They are, these jars are used as ceremonial hand washing, so they're probably not the cleanest, right? We're not talking like a faucet with a drain and all that stuff. We're talking about a big jar of water, and everybody comes by and they wash their hands in it. Okay? Not the cleanest jar of water ever. And then there's also, so there's a certain amount of risk involved in taking the master of the banquet. You're a servant, remember. You're taking the master of the banquet a cup full of dirty jar water and telling him it's wine. There's a certain amount of risk involved there, right? And yet the servants acted in faith. They may not have understood everything that was going to happen, but you notice how they filled the jars to the brim. There was no room for a contingency plan. They didn't leave any space to say, well, if it doesn't work, then we'll just throw a little flavor in there ourselves or we'll figure out something. They were all in with Jesus on this one. Again, we have to ask the question, what does this mean for us? My guess is that, again, we're all in different places right now when it comes to having faith in Jesus. For some of us, we're willing to show that initial faith, but when things don't go as planned, we either withdraw or we fight. Right? We've all been in that place before, right? We ask God for something, and he says, not yet, or he says no initially, and we have these options of either saying, oh, God, I guess God doesn't really care about me, or God doesn't really love me, or we're just going to withdraw from that. Or we fight. We get mad at God. Why not, God? Don't you know all the things I've done for you? Haven't I earned this? Don't I deserve this? If that's you, what would it look like for you to continue to press on in faith and trust that whatever his will is will be good with you and ultimately good for you? Now, some of us, maybe we're someone who've been asked to take a risk by Jesus. Maybe that risk is to tell your friends about him or your neighbors or your family members or your coworkers. Or maybe that risk is to change your major. Or maybe that risk is to take a different job or not take the promotion that's been offered to you because he has something better for you. What's our response when God asks us to take those risks? Is it to make a contingency plan? Is it to only go halfway and say, well, if something doesn't work out, then I got this other stuff? What would it look like if you're in that spot? What would it look like for you to be someone who followed Jesus to the brim, even though you didn't know it was going to happen? When I think about responding to Jesus in faith, I can't help but think about some of the great missionaries I've had the pleasure of working with during my time with InterVarsity. So there's my friend Greg Howe. And he is the InterVarsity's Vice President of Campus Engagement. He actually went to law school and became a lawyer for a couple years because his parents wanted him to. And so he honored his parents that way and then said, okay, now I'm going to take the leap and I'm going to join staff with InterVarsity. There's my friend Jamie Latipo and her husband Paul. So Jamie moved she's from small town Iowa, and then she moved to Kansas City and then again to Lawrence, Kansas because she wanted to plant these InterVarsity chapters where there hadn't been any before. A friend of mine, Matthias Chan, he actually lives in Colombia, and he's someone who has a full-time job but also volunteers with InterVarsity. And so he felt this double calling. He's like, not only do I feel like I need to bring Jesus to my workplace, but I also want to bring it to the campus. And then a student, right? This is my friend Angela, and she's actually a student at KU, and she said, you know what? I'd like to tell more of my friends about Jesus. So she started a Bible study on her own. She's like, you know what? I'm just going to tell my friends about Jesus. And then I think about the past year or so that I've had here at Lincoln, right? Hanging out with Pastor Nelson and being out there on the memorial, right in front of the memorial with his PVC pipe and wind blowing away and our canopy and all this other stuff. And we're just out there, we're telling people about Jesus, right? And I've had so many great conversations with people in this room. People who have taken the risk to come out and do those things with me, like Roosevelt and Roz and Dan and Jake. And I met the student Dominique a few weeks ago. She's like, yeah, sure, that sounds like fun. How do we tell people about Jesus? People who don't know what is going to happen, but who believe that God has more in store for them. And that God responds in faith. And so they're willing to step out in faith. What would it look like for us to be those people? So we see that Jesus is someone who responds to invitation, someone who also responds to faith. And the third thing that we see in this passage, my clicker will go. There you go. Is that Jesus responds above and beyond. Now, I love, love, love this part of the passage, okay? So we have no idea how long the party's been going on, but we can kind of use some context clues, right? So they run out of wine, and in Jewish culture with high value for hospitality, that would be a thing that you don't want to have happen. So we can guess that the party's been going on for a while, right? They probably stocked up on wine, and the party just got, like, so crazy that they didn't, that they, like, but it's been going on for probably for a few days, right? So the servants give the banquet master a sip of the wine, and immediately he praises it as the best wine of the party. Look, where'd he go? Look at how happy he is, right? There's the man banquet master right there, right? Like, you see, okay, so I'm just going to, all right, so, like, he's like, what's happening right here? And he's like, this is probably the bridegroom, and he's feeling pretty good, right? And then you've got, like, this guy, like, where's my wine? And then the banquet master is, like, open mouth, like, I like this. This is some great wine here, okay? So anyway, Legos make everything better. So Jesus gives him a sip of the wine and immediately praises it as the best wine of the party. Okay. So can we talk just for a second about how absolutely boss Jesus is? Just an absolute boss, okay? So if this is me and I'm turning water into wine, this is confession time, okay? You guys, we know each other now. We're friends. You guys have seen my wife and my kid, my photo from my wedding. We're all good. So I feel like I can open up to you, okay? If this was me and I'm turning water into wine, I am not going straight to the head of the party with the first sip. I'm not doing that. No, I'm taking the first sip myself to make sure I got it right. Or I'm giving the servants a sip or two. Like, hey, how does this work? Does this taste good? Does it need a little more miracle? Like, what are we doing here, right? So no, that is not what Jesus does. Jesus goes, he goes to the head of the party, the big shot in the room, and says, here you go, drink up. An absolute boss. And then I love the extravagance of the miracle itself. Okay, do we see what's happening here? Jesus' response goes so far above and beyond what could have even been expected or reasonable in this situation. Okay, again, let's suppose that we're in this spot. Let's suppose I'm in this spot, right? We're at a party or something like that. Someone comes up to me or someone comes up to one of us, right, and says, hey, we're out of drinks. What can you do? I am not going down the natural foods market to pick up some, like, all organic guava nectar, something like that. I'm going to Walmart and I'm going to bring back some soda. And I'm not going to be bringing back name brand soda. I'm going to come back to your party with bags full of Sam's Choice and Dr. Thunder. And you all know you do the same thing, right? And why is that? Why? Is it because we're terrible people? Maybe. I know it's entirely possible we're terrible people. But I think it actually has something to do with the fact that we are not God. We do not have unlimited resources or unlimited love. And so we can't respond in the way that you do. But Jesus is God. Yet respond. See, if it's my limited resources and finite finite finances, I can't buy the good stuff. I can't afford the good stuff. And with my limited capacity for love, I might just roll in and be like, look, y'all asked me to do something. I did it. That should be good enough. Y'all should just be happy the fact that I provided something for you guys. But Jesus isn't like that. See, he can do anything, including turning water into the greatest wine the master of the banquet had ever tasted or had yet tasted. We have to understand there is no cost too high for him to provide for those whom he loves, which includes pouring himself out, even his own life, for us. See, unlike us, with our finite abilities or finite resources, Jesus has it all. And he's willing to share it with us. The question that we have to ask ourselves is, are we willing to receive what Jesus has for us? Do we believe that God has something better for us than what we already have right now? Do we believe that he can give us the best drink that we've ever tasted? Do you believe that he can heal those broken places or fill those empty spaces in your life and fill them to the brim? Jesus is someone who responds to invitation. And we see that he's someone who responds to faith. And we see that he's someone who responds above and beyond. The question before us is this. When we go to Jesus, if we go to Jesus, do we expect him? So I'm going to invite Jake and Carly to come up, and they're going to play a little something, and then we'll get back into a place of worship here. But I want us to spend a little time just reflecting on this question. Do you believe that Jesus can and will come through above and beyond what you could possibly imagine? But maybe there's an area in your life where you need to invite him into that space where you are right now. Or maybe there's a risk that you aren't quite willing to take yet, but you feel like God wants you to take that risk. I just want you to spend some time reflecting on that and seeing what Jesus might want to say to you. And maybe invite him into that space.
Thank you for listening to the audio of Soma Community Church, located in Jefferson City. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for the content or alter it in any way without express written permission. For more information about Soma, please visit us at www.somajc.org.